Welcome to the Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And our guy Blake gets home pop up just really late this afternoon, so he's not going to be joining this evening. But that's not going to slow us down because we've got Cap Guru, friend of the show, Kyle Metz from Detroit Bad Boys. Kyle, thanks for hopping on, man.
Hey, thank you. It's been a minute, so I'm happy to get to chat with you guys and chop it up a little bit. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm pumped too. So today, you know, like I said, Kyle does a bunch of cap stuff. He's very well versed in NBA cap rules, salary cap, for each team as well. So we're pretty much going to end up going through what the Pistons situation is, what are some trade names they might be looking into, what the impact on the cap sheet might be with those possible moves. Before we do that, though, and we're also going to get into your questions like always, but before we do that, let's really quickly talk about that Hornets game. They got a win, and they got a win against a team that made a trade very recently before that. So we keep up that little trend, which is fun. But, you know, what were some things you took away from that game? What did you see out there that maybe you liked, maybe you disliked?
Yeah, I had to watch it late. I did go back and get a chance to watch it, but yeah, I think it's always good to get a win. You know, that's definitely a takeaway. I think just continuing to getting some victories, seeing some buckets go down. Monte Morris coming in and looking, you know, fresh for the minutes that he was in was, you know, a relief. And so who knows? Maybe Monte Morris will fix everything, and that'll be just the bane of Pistons Twitter, I guess, maybe. I don't know. But it was fun. So I enjoyed it. I think we're seeing Stu and Durin. Stu definitely is better as a backup five. I think we're seeing maybe some shades of, like, they're starting to maybe figure that out. And if they can get someone into the four position, that we might actually get some of the Stu at the small ball five or the backup five and kind of playing that long-term role that he'll be in. So those are a couple things that stood out to me from the game, at least the positive ones.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you said a couple interesting things there, but I want to hit on Monte Morris first. Obviously, this was his first game back. He's missed the entire season so far. He only played 11 minutes, but like you said, he played really well. He was really efficient during those minutes. He was out on the floor. He seemed to really control the pace when he was out there, too. It was noticeable, just his presence as a point guard running that offense. You know, what do you think that having Morris back might mean for this roster, the rotations, you know, maybe some of the big men too that he'll be getting minutes out there with as they ramp him back up to a full load?
Yeah, I think the challenges with, you know, I hate to be another guy to beat a dead horse, but Monty Williams is so hard to read and yet predictable in the mistakes that he makes, it seems like. So, like, I would love to say Monty Morris coming back and being healthy will limit Killian's role and will let Sasser have a few more off the ball kind of opportunities. It's just to being a sharp shooter off the bench. But that's probably what it probably should mean. If that will mean that is an entirely different conversation. But we'll see. Like, I think it definitely brings a steadying presence and someone who can shoot. I do think Killian is still a good playmaker. I still think he is able to set guys up in a way that some of the people on the roster just aren't as adept at yet. There's a lot of negatives that come with that. And so being able to have Monte do that while also being able to shoot efficiently, provide some spacing, some veteran leadership, and he's probably going to have a few less of those, like, what just happened kind of moments that Killian seems to get when he gets in the paint and forgets how to play basketball or to move his feet properly. So things like that. So I think it's going to bring some stability with shooting, which can honestly open up a lot of things, especially for guys like Asar. Like, it creates some more rotations that potentially open up minutes for, like, Asar is one of those guys that spacing wise have been having trouble in those lineups. So that's what I'm hoping it provides a little bit.
So I obviously agree. I mean, he's a guy that I was really excited about in the offseason, just for the exact reasons that you said, the spacing, the control, the lack of turnovers, all that stuff. I think the question everyone really wants to ask is the Killian Hayes question, right, which you brought up. Before the season, Monty Williams brings up that he likes big guards, he likes Killian Hayes, and has since then pretty inexplicably played Killian Hayes over just about everybody else not named Cade Cunningham. So the question is, if we assume that there's still going to be minutes for Killian Hayes, where do you think those might come from now that a better backup point guard's in the fold?
That's a really good question. I think, and I hope it's not from Cade's minutes when he comes back, but that, unless you're moving Cade off ball some, maybe in giving him, and while they're, if they're still going to ease Monte in, I think that's where he'll still have some time. But the reality is, when they feel like they need a defensive stop, Monty seems to trust him in those kind of moments when the defense is maybe lacking a little bit. The sad part is this. I'll try to answer your question, but also just hit on, this is the tale as old as time with Killian, right? He has flashes. He's got consistency. This year, he had a longer stretch of consistency than we've seen up to this point. He looked like he was starting to figure some things out. Now, still wasn't a great basketball player, but had things that he was doing that work in a vacuum. And then he gets injured, and then he comes back, and it's like he forgot how to play basketball again. And we've seen that multiple times throughout his career. And so I think that's part of the challenge with Killian, is he does have moments that kind of go, okay, I can see it. That mid-range is falling. It's not the best shot, but it works for him. And so if he has something that works, maybe we have a backup guy here. So I think that's where we're going to get into some struggle, is is he going to ever break out of it? Is Monty going to keep giving him a leash to figure that out? And we know, we've seen that he hasn't been able to do that consistently. So to kind of answer your question, I don't really know. Because again, I don't understand Monty's logic or what he's hoping to get out of Killian. It's been hard to figure out what he sees as the benefit. And sometimes what he says and his pressers don't match what we're seeing on the court. And so I think that's where it gets hard to say, okay, he said it's to set guys up to be a defensive guy next to Cade and to, those kind of things. But then we don't see it on the court happening. And so it's hard to say. But I do think it'll probably come at the expense of Sasser a little bit. It might give him, Monty, feel like he can give Cade a few more breathers and put Killian in with Morris, or even just to have another big guy out there. So that's kind of my guess.
Yeah. All right. So last thing here before we jump into some trade stuff, you bring up Isaiah Stewart potentially coming off the bench a little bit more in the future. I obviously agree with that. Our listeners know I've talked about that quite a bit. But my question to you would be, what do you see in Isaiah Stewart's game that makes him so well suited for kind of that combo big off the bench role that you were talking about him successfully occupying?
I don't know if it's, one of it's the switchability. Is definitely defensive switchability is definitely a big part of it. So that's the skill set that you can point to. Now, in theory, that should be good no matter starter or bench. I think really what it is he's just good enough to be better than most bench guys, but he's not really starting caliber, right? He's that kind of in the baseball term, the quadruple A kind of idea, where you have a guy who's too good for the minors, but not quite good enough for the majors. It's kind of that with Stu, where it's he's good at the things and he's got the motor that you want in a bench guy. He's a leader, from a culture standpoint, but he's not quite fast enough to guard a lot of fours or to really live in that space. Or at least offensively, he's not enough to draw the defense as a four. And so I think him being a big off the bench, he's just playing against lower caliber players who he can actually get better touches at the rim. He isn't terrible with the touch around the rim, but if he's playing starting centers who are really good defensively, yeah, he struggles there. And he's not quite the sharpshooter yet on the outside to really make starting defenses sweat. So I think that's kind of where I'm at. It's more so he's just not quite there in terms of the skill set to be starting caliber where they have him. And I don't trust him as a starting five. He's just not big enough, and he doesn't have the verticality as you'd want. But against bench bigs and being able to switch in defensive specific schemes, he does provide some variability there, and that's useful. A guy that can play 25, 30 minutes a night in the playoffs, that's the kind of guy you see regularly really make the difference for a team. He's important, but it's just not the role that he's in.
All right. We love, as much as we love your basketball analysis, let's get into the meat potatoes here, right? You're a Cap guy. You know this stuff in and out. So let's do a little bit of a preview, okay? So just at a high level, looking at where the Pistons are roster-wise right now, where do they stand in regards to their salary cap situation? You know, just generally, how much can they take in a trade? Where would things be standing, you know, if they don't make a move going to the offseason? Just a high-level overview of where they're at cap-wise.
Yeah, no, that's great. So right now, the Pistons are $3.2 million over the cap, primarily because they have that $5.7 million TPE from the Bagley trade to Washington. So I'm sure you saw some of those things. Had they could have structured it differently where they would have operated as an under-the-cap team and then been able to immediately aggregate Muscala and Gallinari. They chose not to do that. They chose to get the traded player exception, which they have a year to use after it. So like that's why they opted that direction. And that tells me that they want to keep at least one of Gallinari or Muscala to help. And we've seen that. I think it has helped from a basketball standpoint a little bit, which was a low bar, but that's here nor there.
So Kyle, real quick, sorry to interrupt, but so with that trade, the TPE, right? What is the benefit to them right now by opting to keep it, right? Because I think you said it was just under six.
Yeah.
They could have gone, what, three underneath the soft cap. So what's the benefit to them right now, looking at the roster, to keeping that trade exception rather than getting under the cap?
I think, honestly, there's no benefit right now. Necessarily, because they could have taken, there's other things that they could have potentially do differently, and it's hard to see how they put it all together. I think what it does, it gives them something to use for the next year. And it could be something where if they have a major trade and they end up over the cap, they can still bring a guy in. But typically a traded player exception is basically saying, hey, like we shed some salary here, we can hold it for later. And use it in a different trade. The ways they can use that is they can take back any number of players that fit within that number plus $250,000. So for them right now, they can take back $5.9 million worth of salary without sending any money out. And so they don't have the roster spots to do that right now, but that in theory that they'd be able to do that. And so then that's free salary they can bring in right now and get some assets for. We'll get into this later, but there's a few teams that are within that range of getting under the second apron or getting under the luxury tax that they could potentially take advantage of a team trying to save themselves some tax money and take that money in immediately, take a couple second round picks, and Bob's your uncle, and then they're good, right? They don't have to do anything else. So that's the benefit of having that. They can kind of maneuver that, and the timing of it, it pushes out the timing of when to use that money. And then the other thing to know at this point for where they're at high level is they have just under $72 million in expiring contracts. And then Bojan is another $17 million unguaranteed. Okay, so if you put that together, you're looking like $89 million of expiring money. And so that's important to know, right? Because the difference is like, so they have $89 million of expiring money, but they're only projected to have around, let me see where I put this, around $48 million in cap space this summer with Bojan, or $64 million, $64.5 million if they cut him. So you can see the disparity in number, right? So they're cut, they have $89 million worth of expiring contracts, which means they can bring in more money than that. And we'll get to that in a second too. But they'll have about $64, $65 million in cap room if they let everyone expire and they cut Bojan. So that's kind of where they're sitting right now.
So let me ask you before we dive into some more specific trade deadline stuff, right? They have all this cap space. What are some things outside of just, you know, signing a free agent for $40 million can they do with it? Because we all know that it's probably a tougher sell to get a big fish to come to Detroit. So in the trade market, what are some creative things they could do roster building wise?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And the reality is there's not going to be a lot of guys that hit the free agent market that are worth $40 million anyway. The other thing to keep in mind with what you're, to your point, is the 30% max player. So to sign a max player this summer, that's going to be $42.6 million starting that year. So that's kind of the number. If they want, if there is a max guy, that's the number. They'll have room for one of those with their expiring money. But yeah, so the other options they have are taking on long-term salary and getting picks back with that cap space. It's trading for a player that's already got a contract that has existing money on it. And that's where I think waiting for the summer, they're actually going to be harder pressed to get some of those things done than doing stuff now. There is a disparity right now. Just kind of maximize, again, things would have to really fall into this place, but I was able to kind of put together a trade where they brought back $103 million in salary just by trading their expiring money and still holding on to Muscala, just for example. So that's $103 million they could potentially bring in. That doesn't mean they should, but they could with the expiring contracts now versus waiting till the summer. They're only going to have that $65 million in cap room plus a room exception that they can use to sign someone after they've spent all their money. So a lot of it's going to be in trades. It's going to be taking on money and hopefully finding guys. Maybe it's a disgruntled star that's ready to move on this summer and then trading for him in that way. That's going to be your primary way to make roster moves at this point. And then they have those trade exceptions that once they've spent all their money, they can still go acquire some players with that in the room exception.
All right. So let's dive into some questions here because we've gotten quite a few. And this one, speaking of trades potentially now and disgruntled stars, a YouTube user, he wants to know that if Zach LaVine would screw the Pistons cap situation going forwards, if they were to send out expiring contracts to get him. And maybe Marcus Sasser as well. So what would Zach LaVine's impact on the Pistons cap sheet be if it's pretty much expiring money outgoing and Zach LaVine's contract coming back?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for this year, and this doesn't really matter, but I'm just for thoroughness, it would push them farther into the cap room if they trade a certain way. Now, if they send out Harris and Bojan, that's basically the same money. So for this year, it kind of doesn't affect their wiggle room. So that's just the point. But let's say they get LaVine. Bojan has been the rumored piece that they're looking at. So let's say he's part of that deal and it's Bojan and any kind of combination of their expirings. Essentially, what's that's going to put them at for next summer is roughly around $24.7 million left in cap room. And that's including a cap hold for the first round pick, which is currently slated to be the number one overall. So again, if like Pistons lottery luck, we know they'll end up with the fifth pick. And so, you know, it'll actually probably be a few more million in there, but just for, you know, wishful thinking. So probably around $24.7 million in this summer to still do things with. And that doesn't mean they can sign a $24 million player. I'll be honest, you're not getting a starter for that money. That's like bench scorer money at this point in the new NBA. Like, you're going to be hard pressed to find a really good starter for less than $25 million a year, unless they're really old and no one else wants them. So they could go out and sign a Tobias Harris for give him the Bruce Brown kind of deal, right? Where it's like, we'll overpay you for a year. Give you, you know, maybe do a team option or 2 years while we have that room. So it still gives them some leeway. So that's next summer. The summer after that, the books continue to open up. There'll be a new first round pick. So there's some variance in this, but essentially they'd have another, if they don't choose to use that cap space or only take on expirings, you're still getting around $27 million. Maybe like closer to $20 million with the first round pick in cap room the next summer. So that's really a specific way to answer your question. But overall, what I would say is taking on Levine doesn't really screw them up. There's still a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of ways to create space. And he comes off the books the year after Cade gets his max extension. And so he would, like, and that's important because Cade Cunningham's cap hold is going to be $35 million in 25-26. So that cap room is going to evaporate in the summer of 25-26. So that's next summer. And so the Pistons kind of want to be around no more than $8 million in cap space going into that summer. Otherwise, their flexibility evaporates. So having a guy like Levine, assuming he's still productive on the books going into that summer, and hopefully if they can get a few more things in there, so rather than having $24 million in cap space, they have like eight, then we're looking at they can really build a team around Cade, still avoid the tax for a couple years before they're really ready to push in. So to answer your question, no, I think it actually can be pretty strategic, assuming Levine isn't hot garbage and they do some other moves to kind of put a team around them.
So this might be a dumb question, but what's the significance with that $8 million you were saying for the year right before Cade's extension really hits?
Yeah, so the $8 million is, and it's been a minute since I've looked at this, so that's a rough estimate at this point. Some numbers have changed since this past summer. But essentially what that does, it allows them to be over the cap when Cade's number hits. And so without going into the tax, so basically what it will look like when going into that summer, they'll actually been over the cap team. So you want to end kind of the year in that sweet spot of being around 8 million in cap room so that when that hits, you can still sign some guys without going into the tax and do things like that. So that's a really broad answer. Like I said, I could probably get some more specifics and I'll probably tweet some of those out here in the next couple of days as I dig in to give that exact number. But that's essentially the point, is that Cade's cap hold will push us over the salary cap so we can operate as an over the cap team, still have the MLE to work with, and then but not be in the tax while still making moves and maintaining flexibility for the next few years after that.
Gotcha. And all right, so quickly, last follow-up here before we move on to our next question. But you mentioned that $25 million is probably your minimum for a starter. And obviously that's high if you followed the NBA for a while. So what is going on with this new CBA as we move forwards over the years that's inflating those numbers so much?
Yeah, I think part of it is just the salary caps like getting bigger. Like they're expecting, you know, record media deal. So there's just more money, and that's going, you know, the way they split the money between the players and the owners, like that means more salary cap, a higher salary cap. So the cap is expected to rise $14, $15 million a year over year for the next 5 years minimum. And so that's the projection. So that could change, but like that's what they're projecting. And so when you just think about that, there's $15 million more years to spend every year. That's going to push up the mid-level exception. So like the non-taxpayer mid-level exception is going to be $13 million next year, right? Like a couple of years ago, it was like seven, right? Now the room exception, which was a $4 million exception, is now a $7 million exception, right? And so they intentionally, the new CBA, increased the mid-level exception by like 30%, I think. It's either that one or the room exception. They've been increasing the exceptions, and there's planned increase for those that match the salary cap increases. So there's just more money to spend. So that's plain and simple. There's just more money to go around. Second thing I think that's contributing to this is that the extension rules are so much in favor of the players to sign and then request a trade later that people are never hitting free agency. It's more lucrative for them to stay with their team, get the max money they can get, and then after a year, request a trade. And teams don't seem to be fighting that much because then they get assets for the guys instead of losing them in free agency. So on both sides, that's becoming important. And holding on to that salary and being able to use in a trade and operating over the cap under the tax is really where you want to be. like in terms of being able to really maximize your spending, really maximize your team building. So having a guy that's not terrible that you can trade for another guy who's way better with assets but matches the salary, that's part of why you're getting, you know, Bruce Brown getting $20 million because it helped them go get Pascal Siakam, right? Like that doesn't happen if they don't have Bruce Brown on a one-year $22 million contract essentially. So you have things like that that is a motivating some of this change. I think that's most of it. So the guys who are hitting the free market, there's fewer guys hitting free agency, and so they have all the leverage. If you're a team that needs a four and Tobias Harris is the only one that's going to free agency, bro's getting $35 million a year, or at least he's getting a two-year for that, right? Like, because the other thing I forgot to mention is the new rules about the salary floor have to be spent before the season starts. So teams have to spend 90% of their cap space before the season starts, or 90% of the cap number, so whatever the salary cap is. So you can't go into it hoarding a bunch of cap like Indiana did a year, OKC has done year over year, and then like sign your guys and have a bunch of money at trade deadline. You have to spend it before the year starts. And so guys are going to get paid. And so it doesn't help you to come in with $60 million in cap room, not be able to sign anyone, and then have to go sign someone for a bunch of money just to get to the salary floor. Those are some of the things that are causing the prices to really just skyrocket.
All right, so we got this next one here from KCP43, and it's through in the DPB comments. So I always appreciate your questions, man. He asks, any updated thoughts about Jaden Ivey after another week of pretty interesting play? Do you see him as a keeper? Do you think he's available to be traded for? What are your thoughts, Kyle?
I've always thought Jaden Ivey is a keeper from a standpoint of, like, he's got the right mentality to, I think, reach whatever his potential is. You can argue about what that might be. And I think, I don't know if he'll ever be a defensive stopper. He's got the tools to do it physically. Hard to say if that'll ever be if he ever reaches that. But I think he's got the mentality to give himself a chance. Like, I've always believed that. I've loved, and maybe I'm a sucker, but I love the connection that he already has in the city. Like, I think that's real. I think those intangible things matter. And so I've always liked him as a player. I do think him and Cade can work really well together if they're given a chance to do that. I don't think they've been given a chance to do that. And so I would be hesitant to move on for him. I say all of that while also saying and acknowledging, if you can trade him for a guy that also fits Cade and is better now, proven to be better in the past, and is still young enough to be in his prime, he's not untouchable. But yeah, so I think that's where, you know, so even the conversation like with Murray, we had discussions on Twitter about DeJounte Murray. Would you trade Ivy for him? Like, what would the package look like? And I was a proponent of, I think there's a right package that could be beneficial. I think Murray has in the past been a better defender. He's, you know, made all-star games. He's been, you know, all defensive player. He's done all the things that we hope Ivy turns into. And so, like, it's not completely out of the question to at least consider that. Whether I pull the trigger or not, I think it's fair to argue either way. So I don't know if I've seen anything more that convinces me that he's worth keeping. Recently, I think he's been playing well. He's been doing the things that we know he's capable of. I think if Monty's not going to play him, you trade him and you get a guy that he will play and that he will trust and is better. Like, I think you just have to. But it would be sad for me to see that happen. And I think if they're given a fair shake, I think there's a potential, but it's going to take longer. So that's just reality. Like, if we're not trading Ivy, that means it's going to take longer. And that's saying you don't think he's going to, that you do think he's going to turn into an all-star. And you do think he's going to turn into at least a above average defender in the near future. Like, Cade's only got a runway so far. And so I think that's where you kind of start wondering, you know, what do you do with that? And I think I just say it because I think Ivy has more trade value than Duren. I think, honestly, Duren's awesome, but like,
oh yeah,
the league does not value centers. And anyone who tells you otherwise is lying to you. Like, we get the idea of them in our heads, although centers do get paid. I will say they're the highest per starter average player are centers. It's like $15 million more per year than wings, which is insane to me. But like, that's just the norm. That's what the leagues, they pay them a lot. And I think it's kind of because a lot of them stay and they get that super max. But that's a different conversation for a different time. But yeah, I think Ivy will.
There's also less really really good centers.
Right.
Sorry, I had to get that in there.
No, that's. I mean, you're right. And let's be honest. Okay, I'm gonna say that Embiid has never been to a conference championship.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. He's arguably the best center that's ever played the game. You know, arguably, give or take a few. Okay, like in our modern, like he's putting up ridiculous numbers, right? He's doing things that we haven't seen since Wilt Chamberlain, on a like per possession basis, or you know, all the analytics people that you know, like that's we haven't seen this before, and he can't get past the second round. So we got to really like the most arguably the most dominant center in our league right now can't get to the conference championship game. It questions whether or not we should be really pegging our future on a guy who's 25% of what he is right now. Like, so, and I love Dern. So don't, that's not a slight on him. It's just realism. Like, so I think we have to be willing to really, as fans, we can like those guys, but if we're really talking about making the team better, that stuff goes have to change. Like, we have to be able to have those conversations.
All right, really quickly here, because JMax760 asked this in the DBB comments about DeJounte Murray, and you brought him up. So quickly, why don't you touch on what it might take from Atlanta's perspective to bring a guy like Murray in, and then where that sweet spot of a deal might be for Detroit, assuming they would, in fact, be willing to move one of the non-Cade kind of core young guys, because I think we could all agree that's at a minimum what it would probably take.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good question. I'm trying to find my, I posted a few of these a couple of weeks back. And I'm trying to find where I put them. I think for Murray, like I think Jaden Ivey's probably going to have to be in the conversation. Like, and it makes sense. You're not going to have room for him and Cade and Monte Morris and Alec Burks and Jaden. Like, it's just, it makes sense that Jaden Ivey would be in that package. Plus, Atlanta already has Okongwu. They have Capella. They have other like centers that they like. And so I don't think Dern's going to be as enticing. And I'm not giving up a SAR. I'm like, he's the one potential wing that we have on the team that could be something someday. Like, we're not trading him for a guard who's, I think, what, 29 years old already, or 27 years old. By the way, Levine is only like a year and a half older than DeJounte Murray. So that's also just something to keep in mind. DeJounte Murray, I don't think, has the same knee issues, but I don't think he's been the pinnacle of health either. So, what would it cost? Jaden Ivey for starters. What I was kind of projecting and looking at, I think if you do Jaden Ivey plus some expirings, he doesn't have that high of a number. He's $18 million cap hit this year, so it's not hard to match to get there from a salary standpoint. A deal that I thought could be good for both teams is Jaden Ivey, Alec Burks, and Joe Harris in the 2029 first round pick for DeAndre Hunter and DeJounte Murray. I think that's a deal that Atlanta would be interested in. Because they're getting off of the DeAndre Hunter money that has been rumored. They really are desperate to get off of that contract, the Hunter money. And then, you know, they're getting back Ivy, who's, I think, a really solid prospect. They're getting a future first. If you want a top three, protect that. I think they would be fine with that, too. And then you're getting expiring money. And they're getting Burks, who they can immediately flip for some seconds if they don't want him there to fill some of the if they have enough shooting guards or whatever, you know, they'd be immediately able to flip Burks to a contender for a second or two, like if they don't want. So I think that's a package that could get it done. It'd probably be really close to the deadline, just because I think they're going to really hold out for more, and they might get more from the Lakers, maybe. But it's a similar package to what we're seeing rumored for, and Ivy's a way better prospect than they're offering and they're getting off. They're not taking back D'Lo's money, right? So, like, that's just a comparison. Like, they're getting a bunch of expiring. So that's what I would say is a deal that can kind of get centered around. If they don't want to get rid of Hunter, DeJounte for Jaden Ivey, and Alec Burks in a first should get it done. And if I was the Pistons, I wouldn't offer much more than that. And even that's like, I think I would be comfortable with that because what Murray has been, and I think him and Cade could be okay together. I think Cade could use some time off ball. I don't think it's the same issues that he'd have with Trae Young. Like, I just don't. Like, I know that's part of the issue with him is they think like he needs the ball. DeJounte needs the ball more, and that doesn't work with Trae. I think it could work better with Cade, but, you know, who knows? That's what I would say should get it done.
So we're talking about all these trades now. This question here from Migs32 in the DBB comments is asking more into the future. So they say, in the future, Cade's going to be expensive. You've got Ivy, Asar Thompson, Jalen Duren. They're going to get some new contracts. Isaiah Stewart's already been signed to an extension. And even with all those players, you're still really looking for, you know, if all of them hit, a pretty good power forward, right? So his question is, when do we start to see that salary cap becoming an issue for the Detroit Pistons if we assume that, you know, this kind of core group of guys is A, going to be successful, and B, pretty much going to be what it is?
Right. Shout out to my buddy Riggs. Thanks for commenting, dude. I miss you. Yeah, I think when it starts to get expensive, and so basically to fill out the scenario, I had to make some assumptions. Because I think he mentioned, like, if the reason that, like, you're kind of paying Ivy, Asar, and Duren, like, they're above average starters. So that's kind of the idea. We're paying them, like, above average starters. And so I went and did some research on kind of, like, what percentage of the cap does an average starter look at. So that's kind of where I got some of the numbers. So I'm giving Cade his 30%, like, max extension. So I'm basing that. And then Ivy and Duren, they're getting, let me see what I put for them. They're getting like 15% of the cap, which is above average right now. The average starting like shooting guard is like 12% or 13% of the cap. So I gave them a little bump because they're getting capped, you know. But, and that's still around $25 million a year out in 2026. Okay, so summer of 20, this is like 2026, 27 is when those extensions hit. And that's kind of the year that you start getting expensive. I also put Jeremy Grant in here as a placeholder, just as like the, he said a reasonably priced power forward. They're not going to get a reasonably priced power forward if they sign one in free agency. But Jeremy's making $32 million, $34 million, and $36 million over like at, towards the end of his contract. That's pretty reasonable, especially at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And so like, for example, Cade's making $42 million the same year Jeremy making $34. So just to put perspective on what he, like, that's like a reasonable starting for. So 26, 27 is when things start getting expensive. If you retain all of those guys, and then it gets really expensive, 27, 28, because then Asar's extension hits, which I think I gave him like 20%. No, I gave him 15% of the cap too, because that's, but again, if they really hit, it might be a little more than that. So I would be looking at 26, 27, the summer. So it's the summer after Cade gets his extension. If you have all those guys on the roster and you have a starting four getting paid starter four money, that's when it starts getting expensive. The other part of that question is like, is it possible to upgrade at some point from that? Or like, what do you do to, if it's, you know, everyone's average, but you need to go to get that next guy. And at that point you have all that, those salaries to match something major, right? So I think that's where you have the horses to get it done. If all those guys are above average starters and they're making 15 to 20% of the cap, like, you know, that's fine. The first year that Cade gets his extension is 25, 26, and they're still projected to have around $36 million in cap room. Like, if they don't go get LaVine and they just kind of keep backfilling with, like, expiring contracts or whatever, there's still room to do stuff, even with his. So the books are really clean, I guess is what I'm saying. And it wouldn't be until 26, 27 when Ivy and Dern hit their extensions hit. That's when that's the first time they actually like go over the cap. And that would, they would have six guys under contract, I think. Eight guys under contract. So you have to get five guys on a minimum and then one guy on, or four guys on a minimum and an MLE. But then you have draft picks. And so you're getting that built up anyway. So honestly, they're in really good shape. Even if all those guys hit, they'll still have $30 million in room before they even hit the luxury tax at that point. So they have $34 million to play with, essentially, to build out the rest of the team.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, like as much as I think all of us as fans, right, we really want them to win now. We don't want them to be the worst team in NBA history, all this stuff. On some level, it is pretty comforting, at least to me, that it sounds like they still have quite a bit of runway before they really start getting choked down by the salary cap with all these young guys. So, like, Ivy's still got a couple seasons. Lassar's got a couple seasons. Dern's got a couple seasons. And K2 to take even more steps forwards in their development before it really becomes an issue of can we afford to keep all of these guys? Which is just, you know, it's comforting, I think. Right.
Right. And the only time where it starts to get a little awkward is if those guys are actually good enough to warrant a max rookie extension. Right? If Ivy is good enough to warrant that.
Which is a great problem to have.
Okay, then we start talking about things get a little more uncomfortable financially, but then you're in you're just happy that your team's good. Like if Ivy and Cade both hit as all-star level guards, it's hard to like, unless they just continue to refuse to sign any wings that can do anything, they're gonna be a decent team. Like, that's just the reality. So, we're in a good spot financially. So, I know it's overrated when Weaver keeps saying flexibility, 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 and Tom Gore's talking about flexibility. It's like, you have to understand how capped, strapped these guys have been for the last 4 or 5 years. And to have where you're looking at the future of the books and it's not a nightmare and you have room to go, yes, would it have been nice for them to take a step forward so they could really push the chips in this summer and feel confident going in with just under the cap when Cade gets an extension so he can really start spending the money that Tom said he's willing to do? Of course, that's just not where they're at. But financially, they have room to make things happen. Assets, that's where, okay, there's some work to do there. But from a money standpoint, they're set up fine to make some moves.
All right, pulling it back to this year's deadline, Dave Giancola III here brings up a recent report from James Edwards III of The Athletic. He does great stuff if you guys aren't following him already. But he talked about Chicago and Detroit discussing a potential trade for Zach LaVine. They were very early discussions. Nothing was imminent. Chicago seemed to apparently want Bojan Bogdanovic and at least one of Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Asar Thompson, or Jalen Duren. So David Giancola's question here is, what are your thoughts on kind of that negotiation that may or may not be ongoing? And what do you think about maybe giving up one of those kind of core young guys in a deal for LaVine? I know we talked earlier about ways where maybe it wouldn't cost that, but what if that is the asking price?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if, you know, let's be honest. I want a Tesla with my minivan, but I can't have both, right? I don't have the assets for that right now. If anyone wants to help me out with that, you can call me later. But, you know, we're still like Chicago's saying they want those things. Of course they do. Like, I want prime Michael Jordan on my team. That's not happening. So, like, I just think this is part of the negotiation process. Like, and Wes is an econ guy. He'll tell you, right? Like, you got to start somewhere, and you're not starting at your bare minimum. It just doesn't work that way. Like, and everyone knows it. And so this is the classic. This was probably the January asking price. And once February hits, that's going to drop. And if it doesn't, they're going to hold on to LaVine. Like, that's just the reality. And I think if, like, honest to goodness, if they traded one of those four for LaVine, I might stop watching for a little bit. Like, there's other guys that I'm willing to trade those guys for. Like, don't get me wrong. But that would be like signing Bagley for a 3-year, $39 million contract when no one else is bidding for his services, but like times four. Okay. So like, it might make the games more fun to watch, but I don't trust Levine's knees. Like, Levine is great if you're getting him for free, right? If you're getting him for a second round pick and Bojan and Burks, right? Those are guys that actually were something, right? Because to be clear, they could go trade Wiseman and Joe Harris and match salary for Levine and then turn around and trade Bojan and Burks for actual assets, right? If what we believe to be true about Bojan's value is you're trading a first-round pick for Levine, like that's what we're talking about here. So you're asking to trade a first-round pick equivalent and a core guy that hasn't had any runway to really figure out what he is. That would be a massive overpay. That would be worse than the Blake Griffin deal, like full stop.
Yeah.
Like, I know we'd clown it now, and the fallout from that was obviously it is what it is, right? But what they gave up wasn't that much value for what he was and what he played as in the, like, what we got out of him. Okay. So, like, that would be way worse. And so I think that's where, like, I just don't think it's going to happen. And I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't even touch that. Personally, I would be hesitant to give up Bojan in that deal. Like, I think it works and it's fine. But if we're really talking about maximizing assets, you can trade Bojan to the Warriors for Wiggins and probably something else. Like, and they would be more likely to do that. Like, and that might honestly be a better fit. Like, in some ways, if he's not terrible Wiggins. But even then, he still knows how to play defense. So, like,
yeah,
you know, again, I say all of that to say, like, I wouldn't touch that. And I think ultimately you'll get Levine. I think they will give up Bojan and Wiseman or one of those other expirings. If they give up Bojan and Burks, that is still an overpay, in my opinion. But guys who have won the dunk contest and still shoot lights out and are a threat to score 40 any night don't just come available all the time. They just don't. And Levine would be a nice little trade piece when Booker asks out of Phoenix. It's just right there. He'll be expiring soon. You know, we got to do it. So that's my secret hope. So that's how I'd answer that.
Well, I mean, early on in their careers, they were kind of compared a little bit. It's now not a good comparison at all. But for a couple of years there. It was one that they talked about. All right, Kyle, before I bring up this next question, I got to ask you, have you followed the draft for this upcoming year all that much? You're allowed to say no. If you say no, we'll skip.
0%, guys. And I'll just tell you right now, just because I'm excited, I got a son on the way. As our first kid. We've moved states.
Congratulations, by the way, brother.
Thank you. It's been, honestly, when the season started, I was in the Middle East. So, like, it's been a wild ride. So the things that I've been keeping track of is very little. And so, yeah, sorry, I have not paid attention to the draft at all.
No, no problem. That's why I checked. Kyle, we bring you on for salary cap, for trade stuff. We got a draft question. I was going to ask it because we got it. It was a good question. But, you know, you're not the draft guy. You're the trades guy.
You don't want my opinion on that. So.
Well, let's stick with the trades then. This is from our guy Camillus is pissed as turkey here. He's saying, what do you think Isaiah Stewart's trade value might be? And would you put him in that bucket of untouchable players right now?
I'm going to say something spicy. I think he's untouchable because I don't think you'll get back for him what he's actually worth to the team. So that doesn't mean I would never trade him for what, like, I, so to answer your first question, what's his value? Man, I honestly don't know. I think they could probably get maybe one unprotected first or like a lottery, like in that range of like top five protected or lottery protected from a contending team. There's not a lot of those teams that have those kind of picks anytime close. So yeah, I think if you could get a first back first in a few seconds or first, and like if you're sending him out and getting a guy who maybe fits the roster better, if you can get a wing, like, you know, in that kind of So that's hard. I haven't really considered that because I just don't think Weaver's going to do it. But I do think he's worth at least a first round pick. I mean, Royce O'Neal got a first, was given a first round pick for. And I think Stu is definitely Royce O'Neal level. Maybe I'm wrong. Again, I could be wrong on that. Wes, I don't know if you have thoughts from a basketball standpoint. Like, what would you say is like a comparable player in terms of value or like, you know, skill set that maybe has been traded recently that we could even compare that to?
Well, honestly, with Isaiah Stewart, I do think he's fairly unique in the role that he can provide. I mean, you're looking more at historic guys, you know, a Montrezl Harrell, a Kenneth Faried back in the day, guys that were very, very good and key players for very good teams, but they were bench bigs. They played both four and the five for stretches, and they were just generally that switchable energy big, right? So I'm actually with you. I wouldn't like to trade Isaiah Stewart. And, you know, I think to your point with getting the value back, I believe his cap hit is still on his rookie deal, isn't it? Which is very tough value-wise to match.
Yeah, he's got a poison pill provision. And so basically And so what that means is, in terms of outgoing salary, he only counts for his current salary. But for the team incoming, he counts as his new salary or a portion of his new salary to save us some of the specific details of that. And I think, I don't know if it's shifted at all with the new CBA. But so essentially, it's harder for teams to match that. The Pistons would not have a hard time, I think, making the money work on their end because they have more flexibility from a salary standpoint, but it would be hard to bring it in from the team who's trying to bring him in. If they're over the cap at all, like it does affect. That being said, $15 million a year is a really small number. And so like it wouldn't be hard for teams to get him. And right now his current cap hit is 5.2. And so I think the math would work where the Pistons could send him and like a Sasser or a smaller contract out with him and then be able to make the money match if someone had, you know, something along those lines. Because the Pistons can add, it gets tricky, but it could be done, but it makes it trickier for sure.
Yeah. I mean, bottom line, right? It's kind of tricky calculations to make a trade even work. And then given all of that, you need to find a guy that's roughly equivalent in terms of on-court product to Isaiah Stewart on that contract, which truthfully is going to look like a value in another 2-3 years anyway. So I'm with you. I just don't think it'd be a great idea. Let's hit on two more here before we wrap it on up. So this is from, it used to be Ain't Nothing Better Than Being the Big Cheese. Now it's just Big Cheese. I would strongly recommend you go back to the old username, by the way. Regardless, he asks, is it worth kicking the tires on Killian and a second round pick for Patrick Williams out of Chicago? It says both are expiring and both really haven't proven to be starters. So what do you think on that value there?
I mean, absolutely. I just don't think Chicago laughs at that, to be honest. Unfortunately, but yeah, I would absolutely do that in a second. If I could, I would put 2 seconds in there potentially just to see, like, just from a roster construction standpoint, like having another wing forward that can actually play the winger forward and give us something, a new look. Sure. And would I think Troy would be interested in that? Of course, because he loves that draft and trying every single top five, you know, eventually all of them are going to make their way. If Weaver stays the GM, all of them are going to make their way onto the roster at some point. So yeah, I think I would do that because it doesn't really hurt you. And I think trying to sign him in the offseason, they might be able to do that, like similar to like how they got Kevin Knox for really cheap, like on a minimum. But I think there'll be more of a market for Patrick Williams because he hasn't gone to a couple different teams at this point. So I think there'll be someone who's interested in his services if Chicago doesn't retain him. So I would absolutely do that. I just don't think Chicago would say yes to that. Yeah.
You know, I agree. And on the value thing, I think this could have been something that might have been interesting if the way he had played to start the season continued to now. But he's really picked it up, especially since Levine's first injury, that little gap that they had. His role increased, his percentages went up, his numbers game to game went up. So he's actually playing some very good basketball right now. And I truly do wish we could say that about Killian Hayes, but I can't.
Yeah, so, Killian did the opposite. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If Killian kept up his play, like, again, that makes it more interesting. But the reality is that they did the reverse. So. Unfortunately,
I am at risk of saying something I shouldn't about Killian Hayes. So we're just going to move on. This is going to be the last question. So I'm going to let you wrap this up on this. Your platform, right? You're the GM, Kyle Metz.
Oh, gosh.
What do you think the strategy should be ahead of the deadline? What kind of players do you think they could realistically target? And the valuations for those guys. This is from Capo787 in the DBB comments, but I thought this was a great question to wrap things up on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Okay. I think a few things to kind of frame my answer. So right now, the Lakers and the Sixers both have an opportunity to get under the tax line, and the Suns, Bucks, and Celtics can all get under the second apron, which helps them as well, on the buyout market, especially. And so I'm looking at those five teams and trying to see if there's a guy that I can, or two, that I can use the TPE to help them get under and get some of those second round picks back, or even just potentially a player that's still valuable but just hasn't fit their timeline or hasn't gotten playing time for whatever reason. So a few guys from that list. Again, these aren't necessarily all guys that I would like want on the team, but would help, and you could get some assets back. Kirk Korkmaz from the Sixers. Jared Vanderbilt would be interesting, but I don't think they're going to part with him. The Lakers, Torian Prince, Daniel House, Hood Schifino, Trey Murphy, Christian Wood, and Cam Reddish are all guys from one of those teams that you could take in with a TPE, get some assets back just by eating their salary. And then you can cut those guys if you don't want them. But that's something I would look to do. Maybe not the first thing that I do, but that's something that I'm keeping an eye on and trying to get some assets back that way. And that's 5.9. Anyone who makes $5.9 million or less will fit into that TPE. So for all of you who like to do your own scenarios, that's the number you're looking for, $5.9 million. Yeah, I think it, for me, like I said earlier, you can bring in way more now with your expirings than letting them expire and seeing what comes up in the summer. Granted, waiting for the summer lets you see if there are any, disgruntled stars that want out, right? That will happen probably every year. So waiting does give you the benefit of having seen where things are going to land. But I think ultimately, especially with where the assets are right now, with the draft picks they have, waiting for the summer also opens up another draft pick for them to use. But I think where things sit right now, you're probably not going to be in play for a major star, even with the young guys you have. Given the number of picks and the picks that are still owed to New York at this point. So I'm trying to spend as much of my salary cap as I can at the deadline on guys that can actually help this team develop properly. I'm not trying to just win games at this point. I'm trying to make sure there's a team around Cade and really seeing what he can be and really seeing what Asar can be. Those are the two guys that I'm really interested to see when you get proper spacing and real basketball players around them. Can they do special things? And Ivy obviously is kind of right there in that group. But, you know, maybe to a lesser degree. So I'm trying to maximize that. So specifically, my ideal scenario, I don't know if this will happen, but my ideal scenario is going to get Levine for easy expiring, like just the simple expiring contracts. I would love, and I do think if you send Bojan in that, that's fine. But I think if you can get him for Harris and Wiseman, and just they're just trying to get off the salary, that's my ultimate goal that I'm trying to do. I'll throw him a second if that gets it done. And then I'm targeting Jeremy Grant. I know we haven't talked about it. I know he said he's cool in Portland. It's probably not realistic, if I'm being honest. But I'm sending Bojan, 2029 first. I'm trying to see if I can find the actual trade that I put together with this, because I really did like it. I think it could work for both teams. But centered around Bojan and a 2029 first, I'm targeting to see if I can pry Jeremy away from the Trailblazers. Like, they don't have a lot of reason to keep him, other than if they're being smart and really want to try to, like, have real guys around their players to help develop them. But, yeah, if I can get Jeremy Grant for Bojan, Alec Burks, a 2029 first, this top three protected, and this year's second-round pick from Memphis or Washington, I'm doing that deal. Because then you have LaVine. So your starting group then is Cade, LaVine, Assar, Jeremy Grant, and Jalen Duren. And off your bench, you have Monty Morris, Jaden Ivey. You have Stu at the four, and then you have some other guys you can put in. If I don't go the route of trying to just eat money for second round picks, if I can go get Torrey Craig from the Bulls, that would be a great pull. Yeah. He's at $3 million. They're probably not going to make a push. Like, if they're trading LaVine anyway, if I can get him back in the LaVine deal and get Torrey Craig included in that, that would be a solid kind of a solid pull there. And then if you have to bring up the two-way guy, sign Stanley Amude to like a regular contract and let him play the three behind Assar. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. If I can walk away with LaVine and Jeremy Grant, I think they have the assets to do that. I genuinely do. If those guys are open to coming, and LaVine doesn't have a choice. If that doesn't work, I'm trying to get DeAndre Hunter for free. So I'm sending.
Ooh. I'm sending. Yeah, I like Hunter.
I'm sending a few more expirings towards Atlanta. See if they want to get off of that. If you can get Capella and Hunter in exchange, like, so if it's not Jeremy, like, if you can get those two guys for Bojan and Burks, like, so they can flip those assets they want and help their roster. I'm sending Wiseman back, you know, whatever. Like, that's, I would do that. So that's kind of what I'm looking to do. LaVine, Jeremy, Capella, Hunter, those are guys. I'm fine with the Wiggins if there's a move there to be made. Those are some of the things. If you can steal Max Christie from the Lakers to help them with the DeJounte Murray trade, I would do that. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at in terms of like how I would be targeting a move there, because I don't think you'll be able to get like a superstar right now. There's no one that's really asking out. But I think all of those things are good enough deals. If you can get a first round pick from the Magic, you know, take Markel Fultz back in a 2025 first for Bojan. Like, those are the kind of deals that I'm looking to do to maintain that flexibility. Trying to see if there's anything else that really makes sense. I've heard Quentin Grimes is guy someone people are interested in. I don't love the packages from New York with some of that, but it could work. So yeah, so that's kind of what I would do. That's a lot of different things, but if I can walk away from this trade deadline with LaVine and Jeremy Grant, only having giving up expiring contracts in my 2029 first, I think that makes a team significantly better and significantly more coherent, and that's only a win for development. And then both of those guys are under contract for long enough that they're not going to hurt your cap flexibility, and they can be moved later on if they need to be, without totally messing everything up. So that's what I'm doing.
I love it, man. You're aggressive. I mean, GM Kyle Metz just fixed the Pistons, guys. So, Kyle, thank you so much, man. Thank you so much for hopping on, sharing your expertise with us here. Let everybody know, you know, where they can find your work, where they can hear your insights on the regular. Where can the people find you?
Yeah, these days I'm mostly just on Twitter, throwing my random thoughts throughout the day at KyleMetz23. So that's usually where you'll find me. I do some stuff on DBB, on DetroitBadBoys.com. I do contribute there from time to time and help out. So you'll see me in the comments there. I'll sometimes write some stuff. Got the newborn coming. So I might be a little less around, but I love to chop it up on Twitter during the games and stuff like that. And especially leading up the trade deadline, I'll be pretty busy there. So yeah, come find me on Twitter, talk with me there, you know, and then I think that's kind of it for now, at least.
Hey, and one last congratulations, man, to you and your wife. Such an exciting time. Newborn on the way. Yeah, that's incredible. So we're going to wrap this on up. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Sean Corp, the managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting this show. Shout out to all you guys for all these great questions, all these talking points. We'll catch you next week, whether that's on your commute or live with us on YouTube. We really can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you.